You know, I always like to take this opportunity to talk about myself.
Woo!
Looking man, the best dressed man. You know why? Woo, because my name's Ric Flair.
Woo!
Hello and welcome to the only six-star wrestling podcast on planet Earth. This is the Good Brothers Wrestling Podcast. This is Jordan the Body Fox, and with me again today, my new permanent, semi-permanent, full-time, part-time, whatever kind of schedule you want to work, my man, Mr. Ray Cash. What's up, bro?
What's going on, brother? How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. A little sleepy. It's early, but
I hear you.
Get to work.
I hear you. Yeah, so we were talking yesterday. And Ray said he had some free time in the morning time. And I told him, hey, I got a podcast. And he's like, bro, I've got these wrestling thoughts. And I'm like, why don't you just be a regular on the show, man? And he's like, why not? So here we are.
Makes sense,
So at least for the next month or two, we're going to be on here, I guess, every day, right? Every day that you're free?
Yeah. Every day works, yeah.
Heck yeah.
We'll try to make it work every day for sure.
Heck yeah, man. I am super glad to have you, dude. I can't tell you how many people have messaged me. Our friend of the show, Darren, he messaged me. He tweeted me yesterday and told me that he listened to the show, Thursday show. It's Friday morning, so he listened to Thursday's show, and he said he agreed with almost every single thought that you had. And most of the time he disagrees with you on a few things, he said. So he was like, he was singing your praises, and then obviously my mother-in-law Karen says you're the smartest person she's ever heard on a podcast. So shout out to my mother-in-law Karen.
Shout out to Karen, yeah.
And but we decided we're going to try something new today, and we were kind of going to go back in the Wrestling Observer newsletter. What do you think about that idea?
Back in time, man. You don't know where you're going until you know where you came from.
I dig it. So, I don't know if this is what we'll stay doing, man, but I was thinking that between the two of us, like, we could look on Mondays, we could talk about 25 years ago, and then Tuesdays 20 years ago, Wednesdays 15, Thursdays 10, and Fridays, like, maybe 5 to 7.
Yeah. That works, man. That works.
And we can change it anytime. That's kind of like what me and you both have talked about. We like so much about the morning show here is, you know, we don't really run with a template. We just kind of, we talk about the wrestling topics that you and I want to talk about that we think that other wrestling fans, you know, want to talk, you know, would want to listen, talked about, I guess, if that makes sense at all.
No, yeah, it makes sense. And you said it perfectly. When you called it the rabbit hole, we just kind of go.
Yeah, we were talking, was that yesterday or Wednesday that we talked about that?
But I won't say Wednesday, but yeah.
But yeah, we just talked about, you know, just it, the show's just kind of a rabbit hole for Nerd Nation, everybody out there listening today. I think most of y'all that listen on the regular will agree that we just kind of pick a topic or two and we just go with it and just... Mostly, you know, I'm not the smartest guy in the room when it comes to wrestling, so I actually learn a lot doing this show, and that's really what I love about it. And so having a co-host like you, Ray, that is so versed in the wrestling world, man, like I get to like pick your brain. Same way with my partner in crime on the evening show, my boy Mike, Marvelous Mike Moore, like you and him are two peas in a pod. Y'all are, you know, very intelligent when it comes to the game of wrestling. So it's very cool, man. It's very cool. Very cool for me, you know.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it, man. It's always an honor being with you, brother.
Well, I appreciate it, man. So today, I went 7 years back, and that's what since it's Friday, I said, I thought in my head, we'll do 5 to 7 years. And what I came across was the Wrestling Observer for March 28th, 2011, and the whole dang thing was about Victory Road. Victory Road was a TNA pay-per-view that took place on March 13th, and Ray, do you remember what happened at Victory Road 2011?
One of the worst moments in the history of the sport, or the business. Yes, I remember very... I was watching. I think I bought that pay-per-view.
Oh, you were watching live?
I think so.
Oh, bro, how mad were you? What was it in 2011? Was it like $39 or $49 to get the pay-per-view?
It was about 40 bucks, yeah. It was about 40 bucks. I wasn't even mad. I was shocked. Like, I didn't have the emotions to be mad because I didn't understand what the hell was going on.
That was going to be my next question. Well, we'll explain it real quick. So, for those of you that don't know, Victory Road 2011, the main event was supposed to be the Icon, the franchise, or I don't know. But anyway, Sting, the Icon, yeah. Sting versus Jeff Hardy. The reason I said I don't know.
Charismatic Enigma.
Yeah, the Charismatic Enigma. I didn't know when I said the franchise. JBL used to call Sting the franchise a little bit when he first came to WWE. I am fully aware that Shane Douglas is the actual franchise from ECW.
Right,
but,
right.
But anyway.
JBL called him the franchise because he was basically the heart and soul of WCW, so that's why.
Yeah, I got you. So, anyway, Sting is the champ, right? Jeff Hardy is the challenger. He comes out first, and his music plays for a long, long time.
Like 5 minutes.
And he finally comes out, and I'm speaking with the power of looking back. I already knew what I was looking at when I watched it because I was watching a replay. So I'm gonna basically, when Jeff Hardy came out, he was very high or drunk on something, it appeared at the time. And
Jeff's history doesn't show that he's alcoholic or a drinker. Jeff's history is with drugs, so my assumption is he was high as hell.
Right. Yeah, and that did come out. I heard an interview, I think Talk is Jericho. Gave, and he was high on somas and pain pills, I believe, a combo of them, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. It sounds like Jeff, yeah.
Yeah, but he was definitely under the influence of something. And I mean, it was just horrible. Like you said, it took every bit of, I'd say, 2.5 to 4, maybe even 5 minutes of his music playing before he came out. He comes out.
In fact, just real quick, this is how long it took.
Okay.
You know, his theme music he made, right? It's an actual song. The song looped.
Oh, really?
They waited so long that the song looped and started over.
Wow. I did not know that.
That's how long it was, yeah.
Well, anyway, so he comes out. He's obviously under the influence, and you know, like I said, we know now that it was, at the very least, it was somas. I know it was somas for sure, so that's what I'll stick to, because I do not remember if there was pain pills involved or not. But he was very high on somas.
Yeah.
When Sting comes out afterwards, it seemed to me it was pretty apparent that he knew, right?
Oh, he walked out pissed. Yeah, you can clearly see in his face. He was mad.
Sting comes out, and then Eric Bischoff comes out before the match starts. You can tell that he says something to Jeff Hardy. He says something to Sting. You can tell he's definitely trying to kill time, right? He's trying to buy time, basically. Stall.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sting punches Bischoff, and then as soon as the match starts, they tie up. Sting hits him with the Scorpion Death Drop, right? Was that the move?
Yeah, it was Scorpion Death Drop.
The reverse DDT, basically.
Yeah.
And then he pins him. You can tell Jeff Hardy tries to kick out at 2. Sting holds on tight, 3 count. The match lasted, I looked on Wikipedia, it lasted less than 2 minutes.
a minute and 28 seconds. I got Wikipedia up right now.
Minute 28. That is freaking horrible, man. It's sad.
You know why Eric Bischoff came out, right? Like, the real reason he came out.
No. Tell me.
When he was whispering in everybody's ear, he was telling them to finish.
Okay, so, and Jeff Hardy still tried to kick out, so I guess he didn't comprehend?
He wasn't competent. He didn't know what he was doing.
So tell me what you thought when you were watching it live, and anything that I missed, lay it on us.
So what I thought when I was watching, if you watch a show booked by Eric Bischoff, and weird things happen, it's not the most unexpected thing. Being a WCW watcher, there's been many a time where someone took a long time to come out because they're fighting in creative before the match starts. You know, with like the Hogan Jeff Jarrett match where Jeff laid down for him and stuff like that. Like, it's nothing new. Or the time Goldberg came out and cussed out Vince Russo. Like, that's not new. So when he took a long time to come out, I didn't think that something was wrong. From this standpoint, I thought, oh well, there's an issue, you know. And then Jeff comes out, and Jeff is always, he's an erratic person, and I don't mean that like from a drug situation, but just the way he moves, he's a very free flowing, charismatic enigma is a perfect way to describe him.
Yeah, so, there's not another perfect nickname for any wrestler ever.
Right, perfect. So the way he comes out, you know, and how he gyrates and moves. Okay, it was a little off, though, even for Jeff. So, and this was during the time when he was painting his full face, and he would paint his eyelids, so when he closed his eyelids, he would look like he was looking at you and stuff.
Right.
So, I was thinking, there's no way this dude could be high. It's just no way. And then, like, he fell in the ring. And I was like, oh, my God, he's high. And then I saw Sting come out. And Sting walked out pissed. In fact, if I remember, it's been a while since I watched this, but if I remember correctly, he didn't even really pan to the crowd. You know, when Sting come out, it's a bunch of woos and pointing to the crowd. No, he kind of walked down to the ring with a purpose. And so, there's just no way. I was like, there's no way this is happening. And then Bischoff walked out. And then that's when it hit me like, oh my God. So Bischoff tells, and Bischoff did the best he could in that moment. You know, he tells everybody the new finish and tells Sting to hit me so it looks good. And then poor Sting happened to hold that dude down with his full weight so he could kick, so he wouldn't, quote unquote, kick out, and the refs kind of screw jobbed him in the pin. It was just a comedy of all errors because Jeff was really going to try to wrestle a full match. And I don't think he was. You ever heard, and this is, this of course, this is all kayfabe, but you ever heard commentators say when a wrestler's been beat up real bad and then they put their foot on the rope to kick out?
Uh huh.
They'd say, well, it's just instinct. They weren't thinking, it's just natural.
Uh-huh.
Well, when you've been wrestling as long as, like, Jeff has, Jeff has been wrestling, like, as a paid job since he was 16. He started wrestling way before that. So when you've been wrestling as long as those dudes, I'm sure once you get in that ring, there's a lot of stuff that you do subconsciously. So I'm pretty sure he was like, let's go. I'm ready. Bro, you can't stand up straight. So you can't go.
Yeah.
The most disappointing thing about the whole thing, though, to me was, you know, you endangered Sting's life by allowing, and you knew he was high. You knew he was high. I'm pretty sure most of us know, but you know, the wrestlers for a show, the day of pay-per-view, well, actually any show, but they normally get to the arena about noon. So you knew at some point, he was inebriated too much for the match to happen. You knew this. He didn't show up to the match. He didn't show up to the arena at 9:30. You know? Like, he was there long enough for you to know he was high.
Yeah.
Cancel the match, bro. Do a backstage beatdown where Jeff's beat down and somebody else has to fight Sting or something. But the disrespect for Sting, for the audience, for the paying customers, for them to allow a high human being to come out to the ring, that's disgusting. And that's one of the reasons why people look at TNA with such disdain now. There's nothing you can't come past that. You can't move. That's one of the worst things you could do as a wrestling company.
Yeah, I completely agree. In TNA's defense and to their detriment, I'm gonna say something. I'm gonna touch on what you said real quick. So they did it. The Observer talked about how they obviously all the workers got there early, and around between noon or 2 o'clock, I can't remember which it said. Jeff Hardy and Sting, and I guess the agent on the match, worked on the match at the ring, and they said that Jeff was fine, right? Well, then so when they first seen him, he was fine. But it also said that there are multiple reports that he was progressively getting worse as the day went on. So that tells you right there that someone else did see him before that.
There's no way nobody did.
Yeah, exactly. And
there's no way.
So Bruce Prichard and Conrad Thompson talked about it on their podcast, Something to Wrestle with Bruce Prichard. Bruce was at Gorilla at the time, and he said that when Jeff showed up to Gorilla, when his music was already playing, I don't know why he wasn't there before his music started playing, but his music was playing, he's at Gorilla, and they realize how messed up he is. So they're scrambling to figure out what to do, right?
Right.
So they tell Jeff to sit down in this chair while they figure out what they're going to do. So no one's got their eye on him. He walks out. He just walks out. So they were trying to do something at the last minute,
yeah.
But then their dumbasses didn't even have a single person just sit next to him and make sure he didn't go out. That's crazy.
It's a comedy of errors.
You know, how hard would it have been for to have someone beat him up backstage and then they get in the match with Sting, you know, or, you know, have someone beat him up backstage and then Bischoff is like, well, since wrestler A beat him up, he thinks he's going to get a title shot tonight. Well, he's wrong. Wrestler B is going to get it and have this huge baby face come out to a huge pop and, you know, win the title or, you know,
right,
put on a hell of a match, one of the two.
Or you know. You could even go the worst shoot route, because if you remember directly after that, Jeff got buried on TV.
Right.
They buried him, and I'm sure it was from a kayfabe standpoint, you know, but they, like, the whole storyline, Jeff took a few months to come back because it was very known on television that Jeff was messed up for that match, and he had to earn his redemption and whatnot.
Right.
So, you know, just, if you can come out, and Bishop didn't do this, Russo did, but if you can come out on television and cut the promo on a live pay-per-view and cut the promo that you did on Hulk Hogan, then you can say something about Jeff.
You talk Bash at the Beach 2000?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Jeff can't perform tonight because, and remember, at the time, Jeff was heel.
Yeah.
Jeff was working for it, kayfabe, of course, working for Hogan and Bischoff.
As God is my witness, or I'll be in the fucking grave, you'll never see that bald son of a bitch back in WCW again.
And so you remember that, huh?
Yeah. I don't remember exactly what he said, but for some reason, that I'm paraphrasing, but that's pretty much kind of what he said.
Yeah, that's basically it. You know, again, rabbit hole.
Yeah, right.
The funniest thing about that pay-per-view, uh-huh. I was watching that live too. The funniest thing about the Bash in the Beach pay-per-view isn't that segment. It's, so Vampiro fought the Demon, was it? Or was it Sting? In the graveyard match.
Yeah, it was Sting in the graveyard match.
Graveyard match. And remember, the stipulations were, you had, the winner was the person who came back to the arena.
Yeah, yeah.
So when they're showing Vampiro walking to in the backstage to the ring, Hogan, his wife, and his kids walking out pissed, and you can see them, and that's just funny as hell to me, because that's what let me know and mind you, this is 2000, so I'm 12. That's what told me in my mind, oh, that's real.
Yeah.
Hawkins is pitched backstage, and he's not supposed to be on camera.
I remember around that time frame is when, remember when the Young Bloods or the New Bloods or whatever, New Blood, they would drop the blood from the top onto all the Millionaires Club, or not Millionaires, was it the Millionaires Club?
That's it.
Yeah, they would drop the blood on them. But Standards and Practices, Tony Schiavone said Standards and Practices would not let them say blood, so they had to say red. So there was this time where there was this brawl of like nine wrestlers in the ring, and all of a sudden blood hits all of them, and Tony Schiavone's, and the red is hit them from the top. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about, man?
I'd much rather red than viscous acidic liquid.
Before I forget, so just to go back to Victory Road real quick, I did write down some stuff when I was reviewing it for this show this morning. So I read some reviews on the show, and to make matters worse, most or all the reviews that I read said that this was already a boring show.
It was pretty bad.
And it put it over the top to have a match that lasted, what'd you say, a minute and 28 seconds?
A minute and 28 seconds.
And that's the main event, you know?
That's the match that was sold pay-per-view, yeah.
And another thing, something like this had already happened at Final Resolution, which was TNA's December pay-per-view. And they were actually going to strip him of the title and put a different main event on for that pay-per-view that night. And all it said was his friends and him pleaded, I guess whoever was in charge at the time, to not strip him of the belt and just to let him rest. And so they complied, and by the time that main event was ready to go on, he was in good enough shape to wrestle. How dangerous is that you're saying that your main event talent that's going in the main event match is good enough to perform? That's scary. I wouldn't want to be wrestling him.
I would like to repeat my prior point. This is why we don't care about TNA.
Yeah.
Because taking advantage, and I said taking advantage because letting the dude wrestle inebriated is taking advantage of him.
Yeah.
It just is, in my opinion. Taking advantage of an inebriated wrestler and allowing him to wrestle numerous times, not paying people on time, the massive not valuing people enough to just let them go when you could have kept them easily, lowballing people, you know what I mean? Having a person running the company who knows nothing about wrestling. Like, just all of these things. Continuously burying your full-time guys for WWE rejects. Like, so many things. There's just a list that it could be the best product in the world right now. Last night could have been the best 2 hours of wrestling in the past 5 years. I don't give a shit. I don't care. Because as long as that company is under the guise of TNA, Impact, NWA, TNA, Global Force Wrestling, The Owl, Anthem Wrestling, whatever you want to call it, I just can't get down with it because they have lost all of their, they have lost all the benefit of the doubt, and they have lost all of their clout with me and a lot of fans too because of things like allowing Jeff Hardy to come out and wrestle at Victory Road. Send him home.
I agree. This was no different. I know you've seen that video of Scott Hall back in 2000. Was it the same year, 2011? Or 2013 from
in the Indies?
Yeah, Fall Creek, Michigan? Fall Creek, Minnesota, maybe?
Oh, yeah.
And he come out and he just looked horrible. And he still had on his hospital bracelet from when he was spent the night in the hospital from, I believe it was a seizure.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Due to drug and alcohol abuse.
Yeah.
It's horrible. And listen to some of this other stuff. So he was fired. This is Jeff Hardy. Fired from WWE in 2003 for not going to rehab after Jim Ross told him that he had to go to rehab. He no-showed a TV taping and a pay-per-view for TNA in 2005, so they stopped using him. WWE rehires him in 2006. Within a year, he quits, and within 3 weeks, he's got those felony drug charges on him. So,
by the way, adding to that, with added to my list of reasons why TNA will never have respect from a lot of us anymore, they're the ones that continue to hire Kurt Angle and Jeff Hardy, among others, I'm sure, but those two who are very known drug abusers who need help. Like, the reason Kurt got fired was because he wouldn't go to rehab.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, well, he asked for his release, but they had pretty much given him an ultimatum, and, you know, he wasn't in his right mind at that time.
Sure.
You know?
And I'm not faulting these people. Everybody has demons. Everybody deals with things. I'm not faulting these people for what they went through. What I'm faulting... Of course, you make bad decisions, you have to live up to them. We know that.
Yeah.
Jeff has tried his best to own up to what he's done, just like Kurt has. But what I'm saying is, you have to protect the guy from himself sometimes. So, I understand signing Kurt Angle was a really big move for TNA, but the man was popping, like, what was it, like 12 Vicodins a day or something like that?
No, I think he told Dan Lebatard on ESPN that he was popping nearly 75 Lortabs a day.
Jesus Christ. You don't get 75 in one prescription.
Yeah.
So that's another thing that's adding to the list. You should not have signed them, or if you sign them, make it mandatory you will not work until you do rehab.
Right.
They didn't care. They just wanted the talent.
Mm-hmm.
So letting you know. Whereas WWE is getting trashed for letting Daniel Bryan sit on the bench for effectively 3 years, even though people cleared him because they gave a shit about who he was as a person.
Yeah.
But they're getting hate for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. You know, I've said this once or twice on the show in the past, but, you know, I'm a former opiate addict. You know, I actually had to go to inpatient rehab for 30 days on multiple occasions. I had surgery. I had reconstructive hip surgery in 2016, and they put me on, I believe it was 120 OxyContin 30s a month for 6 months.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And it was just over after that. And it was a true struggle to get back, you know. And I had... The best wife in the world. I still have the best wife in the world that never gave up on me. I have a beautiful 9-year-old son. And, you know, I had a great career. And it was a 2-year struggle for me to finally get clean and sober, where I can say, you know, I wake up in the morning and I don't have to have pain pills. You know, when Kurt Angle and Jeff Hardy were on the road, it even more so Kurt, because of when he was in WWE, I guess Jeff's problems did start in WWE as well. So, but you know, they were on the road all the time. They didn't have the benefit of having their family with them every second of the day, like I did, like I had my family with me every night, you know?
Sure.
And on top of all that, they have more money than they know what to do with. They have, you know, an unlimited, basically an unlimited amount of cash on hand. You know, so that's a true struggle, you know. And I don't know, for people out there that, like, say you drink pop or you smoke cigarettes or you dip snuff or something like that, like, think about how hard those things are to quit. You know, and then you think about trying to quit a pill that not only is it physically addicting, but it puts you in the... It puts your mind in a state of the greatest euphoria that you could ever imagine. And think about trying to quit that, too. And the minute you stop taking it, it makes you violently ill, you know? So, and I know you don't, and I tell everyone that so you can see that I definitely do not blame these guys a bit. They've made bad decisions, and they have to answer to those. But I know that the struggle that they're going through. And to see TNA, you know, not worry about their well-being and to instead try to make a quick buck off of them, that's shameful, man. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, you said it perfectly. You So, I don't know if addiction is. I mean, I'm sure part of it is a disease, is a brain issue. But what you have to do is sometimes you have to protect the person from themselves.
Yeah, I agree.
And I am sure, and I mean, Vince and WWE have done try to do as much as they possibly can to kind of acquiesce what they kind of started with the wellness program being what it is now. Well, if your name isn't Brock Lesnar, that's another story.
Or
But
Randy Orton.
everybody,
Or Randy Orton.
because or Randy Orton. Well, Randy Orton has failed tests. He just got the test taken off.
Yeah.
because they have suspended him.
That is true. Very true.
But because, I know Jeff, a lot of Jeff's issues came from those TLC matches and those ladder matches. I know they did. They had to have, because Edge will tell you that that's where his neck problem started. And if so, Jeff, when I think about this, I think about Mick Foley and, when he talked, when he did the Kane Dooley promo, back when he was in ECW as Cactus Jack. If you guys listen, don't know what I'm talking about. Cactus Jack was in ECW, and a kid, some dude in the crowd had a sign that said Kane Dooley. If you don't know what Dooley is, Dooley was at the time his baby boy. Dooley was probably like 3 years old at the time. Dooley's grown now. Dooley works for WWE actually, but at the time, he was a little kid.
Right.
Well, who would say to take a Singapore cane to a child?
Yeah,
That's
that's
ridiculous. And
ridiculous.
don't get me wrong, I have a depraved sense of humor myself, but that's just sick. So it really pissed him off. So he decided to make it into an angle. So the angle he used was he stopped being hardcore because he felt bad for, this him and Terry Funk went across the whole world for over a decade, blowing themselves up in C4 matches and going and dripping gallons of blood and losing an ear and, and taking more barbed wire. All the stuff Foley did just to get noticed. And there was a generation of kids or wrestlers after him that wanted to follow in his footsteps. That probably wouldn't have wanted to, at least in mass like they did, if him and Funk hadn't done that. So he used that as a storyline, and started wrestling really, really slowly and standardly in ECW, which that's the worst thing. That's what makes you over as a heel in ECW is just wrestling a standard match. But so that I think about that when I think about Jeff, and actually all six of those guys in the TLC matches because what they put themselves through, and I know how it's affected their lives since then. And now, what those matches and the Attitude Era matches in general, they raised the bar so high that it took WWE almost a decade to get it back normal. I mean, because think of those old Hell in a Cell matches. Think of the original Elimination Chamber match. And now think of what those matches entail now. They're a million times safer than they were because they looked back and saw, well, man, a lot of people are dying. A lot of people are drug addicts. A lot of people are going through a lot of problems. Well, maybe if they didn't jump through that cell, or maybe if they didn't spear somebody off of a 15-foot ladder, or it's like stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And of course, it's wrestling. So there's always going to be an inherent danger. There's always going to be the need to acquiesce the crowd who's always going to want more. Any crowd is going to want more. The Rolling Stones, Jay-Z, Lady Gaga, anybody who performs, the crowd's always going to want more when it's over. So same thing with wrestling. But when is too much? And Jeff clearly didn't, what couldn't stop himself. So somebody needed to stop him.
Yeah.
Jeff couldn't stop himself in the ring, and that's a lot of booking's fault as well. But then Jeff clearly couldn't stop himself out of the ring, because not only have we caught him high in the ring a couple of times, but you remember that time he got his house raided, and he got charged with I don't know the exact charge, but I know it was I think it was intent to distribute.
Yeah, he got caught with intent.
But that's just how much he had. It's not because they thought he was trying to sell it. It's just when you have that many drugs in your house, that's the charge that has to be given to you.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't want to blame WWE or even TNA, because Jeff chose to do what he chose to do, and he's chose to get better. More power to him. But you have to protect the guy from himself. That's literally your job as a boss. Mm-hmm. Your job as a boss is to protect an employee from himself at times. That's literally your job.
I agree.
Yeah.
Let's we got about 10 more minutes on the show, so why don't we talk about something a little bit nicer?
yeah, this got really dark real fast.
No, I thought it was really good, but I figure we'll end on something. Let's say we'll go from something that we hope we never see again. Let's talk about something that we absolutely would love to have seen. Let's talk about your number one dream match. If you could pick one dream match from any promotion, from with a worker from any point in history, what two workers would you pick?
It's funny you ask that, because you know I'm planning on starting a series about dream matches.
Right. Yeah, I got the idea because you emailed me a working list.
Yeah.
Some other stuff was in the email, but a working list of dream matches and stuff. So I kind of just hit you blindly with it. But I figured if you're working on that, you've got to have at least one dream match up your sleeve.
Sure. So for me, my two favorite wrestlers in this world are Shawn Michaels and Eddie Guerrero.
Wow.
And they were scheduled to wrestle a match at WrestleMania 22. And they're my favorite. They're my two favorite wrestlers because, of course, both of them are top five, top ten in terms of in-ring talent. If you know everybody, but nobody in wrestling history could tell a story better than those two. And I'll argue anybody to my death that those are the two best ever at doing that, at telling a story in that ring. The stuff that Shawn and Eddie could do just with their faces was better than what people could do with their entire bodies. You know what I mean? So,
oh yeah,
what they could do against each other in that setting, you know, with Eddie, who notoriously is a guy, Eddie was a guy who would drive himself sick trying to outdo himself. That's how much he cared. You know what I mean? So with the chip that would be on those guys' shoulders, and those two had never really wrestled before. I don't think they've ever wrestled before, other than like maybe a tag match. I think I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it would have been the greatest or the biggest match of all time. I mean, I'm not that naive, you know. It's not no Rock Hogan or nothing like that, but that could have easily been the best WWE match of all time. I think they could have.
Oh yeah, it could have been one of the best, you know, mat wrestling matches, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If what we saw the year before from Shawn Angle was that great, Angle wasn't as good a storyteller as Eddie was.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that. I think
I'm
Angle,
not saying that Angle's not great.
Oh yeah, no, I know what you mean. I think Angle's probably a better technical wrestler than Eddie, but yeah, you're probably right. Eddie can probably tell a story just as, you know, up there with the best of them. Obviously he is one of the best of them, or was.
And when you say Angle is probably a better technical wrestler, that's what we think. But Eddie's been wrestling since he was 5 years old. He came from a family of wrestlers. So when it came down to it, if Eddie wanted to wrestle Olympically, he probably could have.
But could he win a gold medal with a broken freaking neck?
Well, nobody can do that but Kurt. That's Kurt's thing. What's your dream match?
All right, if I had a dream match, if I could only pick one, it would be Vicky Guerrero versus the Shockmaster.
You are wow.
No, if I could pick one,
put that on the same card with Alicia Fox and Melina for the Divas Championship. Same card.
Actually, my dream match that I always refer to anytime I talk to someone about a dream match, and it's really It's really only kind of popped up in the last 2 years because one of the guys had just recently landed in WWE, but it would be the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels, versus the phenomenal one, AJ Styles.
That'd be so good.
And this isn't a unique one. You know, a lot of people, I think this was actually on your list as well.
Yeah.
But to see that match from two guys to break it down, there would be no AJ Styles without Shawn Michaels. You know what I mean? Shawn Michaels is the guy that opened the door and showed guys that were 5'10", like AJ Styles, that they could be world champion, that they could burn the house down and get 5-star matches. And
absolutely. Jericho, Punk, Daniel Bryan, AJ, yeah, so many of them.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, I mean, and I think both of these guys, they could, you know, there's, you know, the old saying, like, they've said it about, I've heard it said about Flair, and I've heard it about Michaels, and I've also heard it about AJ. You know, these guys, they could wrestle a broom and get the broom over.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I think those two guys, I think, you know, they're similar in size, that, you know, they both got some high-flying ability, you know, and they are just amazing on the ground, and they can tell a story. You know, yes. AJ can dominate a match, and I've seen him tell a story on, what, at least three of the four occasions with James Ellsworth, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's very good. He made James Ellsworth look like a competent wrestler.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Shawn Michaels is, I mean, Shawn Michaels has carried, I mean, think of all the people that he's had phenomenal matches, or at least really good matches with, I mean, Sid Vicious, Vader. He made Diesel. Look good.
I got you one better. The match of the year for the Wrestling Observer, for for 2006, I believe, was the WrestleMania 22 match between him and Vince McMahon. He took Vince McMahon to the match of the year.
What? I didn't know that. Wow, yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Man. And, you know,
and I know that because there was a time where every Shawn match was one of the matches of the year.
Right.
19 against Jericho, 20 against Triple H and Benoit, 21 against Angle, 22 against Vince, 23 against Cena, 24 against Flair, 25 against Taker, 26 against Taker. Every one of those are classic.
Oh, yeah.
And only Shawn can do that. And I guess until now, AJ.
Yeah, you know, and those matches that AJ was putting on in New Japan, I mean, the matches that he was putting on in TNA 10 years ago were, I mean, no pun intended, but they were phenomenal.
Yeah, well, the pun is very...
Yeah,
very,
maybe the pun is intended, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
He leaves New Japan. I mean, he leaves TNA. He goes out to New Japan. He burns the house down out there. And that was the coolest thing storyline-wise for him to ever do, was to spend that time. He wasn't in New Japan forever, but for him to go out there to be the leader of the Bullet Club and then to come to WWE, because now they can do that whenever they're ready to. They've got a ready-made storyline for the Bullet Club right there, because you have the original leader in Finn Balor, Prince Devitt, over there. And then you've got AJ Styles over here, who, you know, some people say he was the second, some people say he was the third leader, because, you know, Carl Anderson technically was the leader for a bit, in, you know, after Devitt left, after Balor left. But either way, you know, you have, you know, two of the three most popular Bullet Club leaders, Kenny Omega being the third, right there, you know. And, I mean, it's a ready-made... It's a ready-made storyline. But anyway, I'm kind of getting off, going down that rabbit hole again. But it just shows, you know, how phenomenal AJ Styles is, that he goes over to New Japan and they put him, you know, they put him as the leader, as the most over group in New Japan,
and give him the title in his first or second match.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
And let me correct myself before somebody, I know somebody's gonna call me out. It wasn't the Wrestling Observer Match of the Year. It was Pro Wrestling Illustrated Match of the Year.
Okay, I got you. PWI.
So, yeah, PWI. So he won in 2004 for the Triple Threat with him, Triple H, and Benoit. But 2005 for him versus Angle. 2006 for him versus Vince. 07 for him versus Cena on Raw in London, not the WrestleMania match, the damn near 60-minute match one. He won in 2008 for the match against him and Flair, the match against in 2009 for him and Taker, and in 2010 for him and Taker.
Wait a second. Those were all matches of the year for PWI that Shawn Michaels yes. won?
Yes. And then, if you want to be literal, in 2012, when Taker fought Triple H in Hell in a Cell, Shawn was the guest referee at a big part of the match, so you could give that to him as well.
He was wearing those sexy shorts, wasn't he?
No. That's going back. That's like old Shawn.
Oh, that was that back in the day? Yeah. For some reason, I was thinking
old man Shawn.
Yeah, I was still thinking that he was wearing them for some reason, but now I remember the finish where it was the end of an era, and they're all walking out and hugging and stuff. And so that was the second Triple H match, right? In Hell in a Cell.
Yeah,
that's when they did that, right? They all three walked out together.
Those sexy shorts, huh? Tell me how you really feel.
But no, I was saying, I realize now that he wouldn't have wore that because that ending, you know, the ending that was, you know, that was a very serious moment, and it would have taken away from it if he had those shorts on. But
I thought those
shorts were funny when he was doing all that DX stuff. But but anyway, what was that? I forgot what I was going to say. But basically, you know, I mean that's my match. That would be my dream match. I feel like those two guys would burn the house down. You know?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Absolutely. I don't see the reason why.
Yeah. And it's not too late. I mean, dude, I see Shawn Michaels, you know, we all see him on TV from time to time. He's still in great shape. I bet he could, there's no doubt in my mind that he would come back and still put on a decent match, but I'm glad that he has no plans on coming back.
Yeah.
Because, I think me and you would agree on this, that especially seeing the Undertaker the last few years, there is a time when, you know, you need to hang it up before fans start remembering you for your matches that were not as good. And that's kind of what's happening with me and The Undertaker right now.
Well, but before you become Ric Flair.
Exactly.
And that's no disrespect to Rick, but that's a generation of people who grew up watching Ric Flair who think that Ric Flair is nothing.
Yeah, there's a whole generation that looks at Flair as the greatest wrestler of all time. And then there's a whole generation that think of him as the old man that held on too long. And that's sad. That's really sad.
It is. And it's something to me. In wrestling, you don't always... Most of the time in wrestling, you leave on your back, right? This is the way you're supposed to. You're supposed to leave putting someone over. But you don't ever get a send-off. Very few wrestlers have gotten a send-off. Well, Shawn got a send-off, and I appreciate that he respects Undertaker, even Flair, but the business enough to say, you know what, I'm gone, and I would love to come back, but I'm gone. Same with Austin, I respect that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because just like you said with Taker and Flair, Shawn's legacy will never be questioned because when Shawn was supposed to leave, he left.
Right.
You know, Taker should have left at 28. That was a perfect ending. But you know what? He came back. You should have left at 30. He lost. You know what? He came back. And then at 33, the match is very, very bad, but the ending is the most poignant ending they've ever had of a WrestleMania, and he should have left. But here we go this Sunday, planning on seeing him wrestle again.
Yeah. Okay, so we're about out of time, so I got one more quick question for you. We were just talking about WrestleMania 33, which was Taker versus Roman, closed the night.
Yes.
The finish, when Roman hits the ropes, I believe he hits them three times and then spears them, right?
Right.
If you notice, after he hits the ropes the second time, when Taker is facing the hard camera and Roman's running away from it, Taker... braces himself for a spear, but Roman hits it a third time.
Yeah.
Roman messed that up, right?
No.
Taker messed it up?
Taker messed up. Taker was completely out of the match the whole time.
Okay.
You could tell that because there was a part where Taker had him for the tombstone, and it was supposed to flip. and Roman had him for a tombstone, and Taker was supposed to flip or something like that, and Taker couldn't hold him. So I think when he did the three, he was just trying to make it look good, because he knew the match was bad, yeah. And Taker was out of it, and Taker just wasn't prepared. Taker didn't expect him to do that, but I don't think Roman messed up and missed the spear. I think Roman tried to make it look good.
Yeah, I didn't think that he necessarily missed it. Yeah. I just thought that there was a miscommunication. I thought
that was
maybe
probably no communication. Yeah.
Yeah, I just in my head I pictured, and you know I'm probably laying the blame. I probably purposely tried to lay the blame on Roman subconsciously, just because you know for my disdain for Roman. But in my head I pictured him and Taker going, "All right, I'm gonna hit the ropes twice. I'm gonna spear you," and then Roman somehow forgot and hit the ropes a third time, you know. But again, probably subconsciously, you know, maybe consciously, you know. you know my feelings. Everyone out there in Nerd Nation knows my feelings on Roman. So.
Sure. And then think about this. Normally, he hits the ropes twice to do a spear.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So I guess giving him more momentum to beat the Phenom was why he hit it a third time.
Right, right.
You know? I don't fault Roman for trying to make that match look good, because there was nothing he could have done for that crowd to accept what happened that night.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Not only because it's Roman, but because it's Taker, and it's the main event, and it looked bad.
Yeah.
And it didn't look bad because Roman made it look bad. It looked bad because Taker shouldn't have wrestled.
True, very true.
But nobody's going to say that. Everybody's going to say, well, Roman should have carried him.
Yep, that's very true.
So,
Well, man, our first show together as a regular team came out pretty good, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I hate we had to talk so negative at the beginning of it.
Yeah. I mean, at least we got about 8 minutes in of our dream match. We didn't talk as much about Vicky Guerrero versus the Shockmaster like I wanted to, but we can save that for... We can do Monday, yeah. We can do the whole show on Monday.
An hour of Vicky Guerrero and Shockmaster. Let's get it.
Let's do it. All right, Nerd Nation, thank y'all very, 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 very much. You can follow the podcast at Good Bros Podcast on Twitter. Ray is at It's Ray Cash. I am at Fox the Podcaster. Leave us a 5-star rating and review. The tip jar URL is pinned to the top of the podcast Twitter and Facebook page. We want to thank y'all so much for tuning in. We're going to take the weekend off, and we're going to be ready to go on Monday morning. Ray, you got anything you want to plug before we go off there?
I do have one thing. Later on today, me and Simon Cotton from Sports Keta and the Wrestling Squared Circle, moderated by James Boyd of One Nation Radio, we had a special podcast we did last night called Forgive the Language, Fuck You Mean. this is the second one we've done, and it's kind of a contentious debate podcast. If you don't know Simon is his reputation is he's generally negative to the product, and everybody knows me, I'm generally positive towards the product. So there was a clash of style, so to speak, and so we had some good content, kind of ran down a bit of the WrestleMania 34 card and things of that nature. So, yeah, give it a listen. It'll be up today.
Okay, great. Is that going to go up on...
Suplex Podcast Network, yes.
Okay, great. Also, guys, check out Ray's other podcast, which is the SMC Wrestling Podcast. You can follow that show on Twitter at the SMC Podcast, right?
Yes.
Okay.
That's correct.
Awesome. All right, guys, for everyone out there at Nerd Nation, thank you all for tuning in today. And everyone out there, stay too sweet. David Arquette won the world title.